Afternoon to Neil Speck. Good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon.
Neil is the current editor of the Essex Inquirer, and it's a group, isn't it? Because you've got the Thurrock Inquirer, you've got East London Inquirer as well. But your history in newspaper, you got what I call old school. Tell us, how did you get into journalism in the first place?
Cool, blimey. Long time. Ever since I was a little tot. I think I was inspired by Alan Wicker.
Really?
My parents and grandparents remember me as about a 4 or 5 year old, and I had some little black round glasses, square glasses, sorry, just like him, and I used to go around doing a wicked Alan Wicker impression, and maybe that's what did it, but
really?
I just always loved newspapers. I used to get the Beano and the Victor, and my dad used to get the Daily Express, and I read the Daily Express before the Beano and the Victor.
See, that was when it was a good paper, because so did we. It used to have, I had Rupert the Baron for a start.
It did.
And quite honestly, I think perhaps I shouldn't say this, the Express seems to be a sensational newspaper these days that just seems to sell newspapers on weather stories.
If there's a weather story, you'll find it on the front page of the Express.
That and it's always wrong as well. It's
well,
always wrong.
Is anybody get anything right on the weather? But you're right, it's everybody has to find a niche, and it's sort of been forced out of the right-wing middle-class niche, so it's gone down the sort of UKIP niche now, and anything they do, it trumpets, and so there's an audience for it.
Absolutely, and I'm old enough to remember, and you are as well, to remember The Sun when it was a broadsheet as well, and a serious newspaper.
Yeah, well, The Sun, I actually did a very short stint on The Sun quite a few years ago, I think it was the mid-80s. I was working in the Peterborough Evening Telegraph at the time, and I was lucky enough to get a few shifts working on The Sun Sport, but it wasn't really for me, I'm afraid.
Okay, so what was your breakthrough? How did you get started?
Went to college, did my A-levels, always just I didn't want to do anything else. Went and did an exam up at Darlington to get into the college for the profession, and then I had a year at college at Sheffield. As a Yorkshireman, obviously, was on my doorstep, not too far away from where I was born. Got my first job on the South Yorkshire Times, a weekly, good old weekly newspaper. Shows how things have changed. It used to have about 60,000 circulation, 5 editions over the whole of South Yorkshire. And that would have been in, I think I started 78. And now it's a 1 edition, very weak free sheet. So it shows how times have changed.
I remember Jeremy Clarkson, who's a very, very similar route to you and is from the same area.
He was at Doncaster, yeah. I mean, I was born South Emsall between Doncaster and Barnsley. And yeah, I mean, Doncaster in its heyday had 2 evening papers. Hasn't got one.
And it's all changed, isn't it?
There's
many reasons for that, and we'll come on to that. We've got a young man sitting here, Joe's still here. Are you on the right mic, Joe? Just say something for me.
Hi.
Yeah, you are. That's better. Yeah. I mean, it's harder, surely, for someone like Joe now, who's just trying to break into the industry, to start when there's not much around as many as there used to be.
There certainly aren't as many jobs, that's a fact. It's always been hard to get into. I mean, the fact that we went and did a selection interview and an exam to get into college, and there was no guarantees of jobs even then, and going back to my year, which would be the academic year ending in 78, there were certainly people then that didn't get jobs. So it's always been tough. It's always been something that a lot of people want to do, but certainly nowadays there are far fewer opportunities, and actually far more candidates, because what's happened is, as you know, education's all about seats on bums. Bums on seats, and so you're getting lots and lots of young people attracted to media courses.
Yeah.
We all raise our little fingers and do that in the air. Yeah. There's a huge plethora of people coming into colleges who, quite frankly, aren't the very good. And I work with the NCTJ that runs a course that you're on at Harlow, and I got asked to do interviews for students to go on the college courses 2 or 3 years ago, and I sat there all day, and some people came, some were very, very good, some were very keen and committed, some were just clearly, they hadn't done the research, whatever. We recommended approving probably 50%. The college approved all of them, took them all on. And it was just pointless, but it goes back to they need to get people in the classroom so they can get their money. And so you're giving false hope to an awful lot of young people, which is a shame.
Did you start WI notices and funeral notices?
Yes, yeah.
You've done that.
Well, you see, the thing about, as a young reporter, I learned a salutary lesson very early days. My editor was, you talk about me being old school, was a guy called Dick Ridyard. He used to stomp about in a bow tie and braces and smoke little cheroots. And he sent me in my first week to go and cover Mexborough Rotary Club. I used to sit at the back of the room as all these local shopkeepers and businessmen went about their business running the Rotary Club. And I'm a great admirer of Rotary Club, as it happens now. But at the time, 19 years old, thought I knew everything, and listened to them ponder on about the local community and all this, that and the other. Came back and wrote, I think, one paragraph, which is what I thought it was worth as community news. Typed it out, the old typewriters and papers in those days, stuck it in the in tray. And about half an hour later, there was a huge roar, "Spade, get in my office." And Dick Ridyard called me in and said, "What the hell is it got?" You know, expecting five reams of paper about the meeting. And because I was brave and some would say stupid, I said, "Well, I think that's all it's worth, Mr. Ridyard." I was very lucky to still be in a job at 5 o'clock, but it taught me a lesson. And he was right. He was absolutely right. It was the things they were talking about were things that affected the local community, and that's what makes a good local newspaper. It touches on things that touch its readers' lives.
I was imagined a busy newspaper office, as you see in Superman films, you know, with Clark Kent at the get me the story. How are we going to, you know, that sort of thing. And perhaps is that still true today, or is that died?
Technology has changed it, obviously. Mm. It was interesting this week. There's been a lot of talk about cybercrime.
Yeah.
The Enquirer this week, we got hit by a little intruder, an encryption virus that completely scuppered everything in the office, and has actually destroyed all the Word files and everything. It's been a real nightmare. But it was sort of back to the old days of getting the paper out. And the girls in the office sort of turned around to me and said, "What do we do without email?" Well, what we used to do, you get on the phone, you go and interview people, you talk to people.
And so, a paper and a pencil.
And exactly. And that is the one of the big differences. And certainly the reporters, when I was starting, we got out a lot more. But people were more receptive to the media then anyway. There was a lot less suspicion. And I suppose one of the biggest differences, and I know we're going to talk about the police later on, was one of my first jobs was every morning I would go down to Mexborough Police Station and have a cup of coffee with the duty sergeant or the duty inspector, who would go through the logbook of what happened in the last 24 hours. And it was a face-to-face. He trusted me, I trusted him, and we got on. Now, you can't speak to a police officer. There's a plethora of press officers and all of it, and then we'll send you an email and it's on them. But the fact is that we used to talk, and if he said to me, "Look, leave that out for this week because we've, you know..."
Yeah, we're not quite sure if he's guilty
exactly,
or not.
Exactly, or we know, if you don't report this, we think he's going to come back and do it next week, and so we'll let him... So you've got an element of trust, and you only ever broke that trust once, and then the relationship was over, and that's a lesson in life for a young journalist. Yeah. If you strike an agreement with somebody, then for heaven's sake, keep it, because you might want to go and knock on that door again.
Do you think that's even the danger of social media these days has made things lazy for a journalist? They can find out what they want without even leaving the room.
Very much. It's made it lazy for everybody. And I mean, there's a certain senior police officer in the Essex Constabulary who's, I think, made his name by what he's done on Twitter rather than his arrest record. But there you go, that's today's society for you.
Yeah, exactly. Right, let's take a quick break and then we'll be back with more.
Life begins at the beaches. Call in and see how life could change for you. Regular seminars for care fee planning, social get-togethers and lunch clubs. Visit us to see how your life could change for the better. The Beaches, London Road, Brentwood. Visit signaturecarehomes.co.uk for more information.
Into Lakeside turns 25 and fabulous on the 25th of October, and they're planning the biggest birthday party ever! With a performance from 90s superstars Bewitched and loads of other spectacular...
I think they've got the idea. Just do it all in your normal voice.
Spectacular celebrations. Join us on October the 25th for the party of the year. Visit into.co.uk/lakeside for details. How's that?
Affinity Legal Group is one of the leading will writers in the United Kingdom, with over 100 years of collective experience. We specialise in will drafting, trusts, estate planning and probate, with our network of specialist advisors giving you the best service available. Even if you already have a will, changes in your circumstances or the law could mean that you need to have it checked and updated. Contact us on 01245 850000 or visit our website www.affinity-wills.co.uk to find out more.
I want to break free. Tell me you to work on the glass.
Yes, all great tunes, but we've heard them lots of times before. So, how about this then? Original, surprising, and great radio. Brian Ager hosts From the Underworld here on Phoenix 98 FM, Saturday nights, 10 till midnight.
My book come in the other day with the raging ump. Said that Mike Jones was back on the radio again. He said, I ain't listening to that twaddle. He won't listen to him. Don't like him. Can't stand him. I done burnt a bit of liver and bacon. He likes a bit of liver and bacon. Don't like Mike Jones, though. Nah, don't like him.
On Phoenix FM, it's the Mike Jones Radio Show. A firm favourite with the whole family.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Indeed. Just a reminder as well that Brian is back. You just heard the promo for From the Underworld. He's been off for 3 weeks, I think. He's been touring the States. He's been to every record shop out there. So good luck on Saturday night. There's going to be plenty of brand new music that he's squirreled from record shops. No, I don't. He's paid for it. What's the best word to use, really? Well, he's bought it and he's going to play it on Saturday night. That's between 10 and whenever he decides to finish, really, here on Phoenix tomorrow night. Right, my guest in the studio, Neil Spake from the Essex, the Thurrock and the East London Inquirer. We were just talking about sort of your history in newspapers, and also let's just talk about free. Your newspaper is free, so is the London Evening Paper now, and so is just this week the NME has decided to go free. Are all newspapers going to be free one day, do you think?
That's a million-dollar question, literally. Yeah. I think there will always be, as we were talking about, the Express and the niche markets that people can go into. And it's interesting that the NME, because of its genre, has got so much competition nowadays. I think local newspapers will remain a mixture of paid for and free. If it's good enough, people will pay for it. If it's got content that you can't get anywhere elsewhere and it's content that you want, you will go out and pay for it as long as it's reasonably priced. The free papers, if you remember, came in sort of late 70s and sort of took the country by storm. Round here you had, Lambert, who set the yellow advertiser system up. He was an innovator in the field and they did well, and then various other ones came along. But the content tended to be a little bit frivolous then, and was an awful lot of adverts in terms of a paid-for newspaper might be 60% editorial, 40% advertising. They were, not just the other way, they were sort of 80-20 the other way. And so they changed. But what happened was they knocked the stuffing, and the newspaper industry lost its nerve and changed a number of papers that were solid, solid paid-for papers with a long history, and they panicked and turned them free. And you've got papers around here, obviously, in Brentwood and Bill the Gazette. You've got in Southend, you've got the Standard. Over in Thurrock, you have the Thurrock Gazette, which is over 100 years' history in those newspapers. And I think if the companies that owned them would have held their nerve and carried them as paid-for papers, they would still be paid-for today. But once you've changed to free, it's very difficult
to
change
back. Yeah.
It's very difficult. We have a different ethos on the Inquirer because we're a very small organisation. We don't have a huge raft of accountants and central office and everything to pay for. There's probably in total 15 people in the whole company. And if we're successful, it means the boss gets a holiday. If we're not successful, it means he has to go to Clacton.
But if I'm looking through your paper now, like page one, two, page three, page four, full of news items. I don't know how many news items are in a particular edition. But
about 50.
Well, that for a free paper, I think that's really good. If I looked at maybe the Yellow Advertiser, there's certainly not 50 news stories in the Yellow Advertiser. We've had a newspaper recently that started and seems to have disappeared already, Made in Essex.
Made in Essex was, I think, sad to say, it was always on a loser because it didn't belong, it didn't fit a niche. What exactly was it? It was a frivolous, jesty type thing focusing on some ethereal Essex Towie mantra. Yeah. It was like reading it whenever, but it didn't really pitch itself anywhere where I think there was going to be a sustained audience, and sad to say, I mean, from a personal point of view as opposition, yeah, I'm quite pleased that he's gone, because it did take revenue away, or potential revenue away from ourselves. And there is only X amount of money out there for
absolutely
any number of papers to go and compete for in this day and age. But I think it just lacked focus. And I think what I try to do, my team try to do with our newspapers, is very much focus on the areas where we have the paper. It's difficult with the Essex edition, because our broad sweep of what the Essex that we cover goes from Southend to Chelmsford to Basildon to Billericay over here to Brentwood. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge swathe with lots of different communities. And we struggle. We always fill the paper. That's not a problem at all. We could fill the paper 10 times over because we've got so much stuff. But it's finding things that are interesting to people in Southend that may well be interesting to people in Brentwood, and vice versa.
Exactly,
It is difficult even with that sweep. And going forward, it's certainly on our agenda to say, can we localise even more? We looked, for example, at Southend, and doing at Southend what we do in Thurrock. Thurrock was the first one that we did, because Thurrock's got a unitary council. There's a nice fit there. It's a little borough on its own. Well, it's a big borough, but it's on its own. It's got unique elements to it. Southend is similar. It has a unitary authority, and therefore there's revenue to be had as well in terms of council spend and whatever. It's more difficult here because the council's in Chelmsford, in Billericay. Well, Billericay's a town council, in Basildon as such, and in Brentwood. They're smaller local authorities. They don't particularly have a huge amount of spend, for example. Mm. So it's difficult for us. Essex County Council, which is an organisation that I will struggle to get through an interview without using some strong words about, but it may, and I'm sure many people say that. So it is difficult to do it.
You were former editor of the Thurrock Gazette, and I'm sure you'd agree that 30 years ago it was a much bigger and stronger paper than it is today. But that's not the staff's fault, is it? Because they're on low pay, they've got low budget coming in. What's happened at
what I mean. You've got 130 odd years worth of history. I mean, I've sat and gone in Thurrock Library and gone through the old microfilm files of the good old days, and every now and again somebody does a renovation in the house and finds loads of newspapers stuffed in the walls and brings them in, and they're a great read. It was what it was. It was a really good local focused newspaper. I think at one point it was the Tilbury and Grays Gazette, for example, in its title, and it was focused on what it was. But of course it all changed, and when the decision was taken to turn it free, there was less commitment by the accountants to resourcing it, and it's crept down. And now I believe, in terms of in the office over there, you've got two people, young people, Neil and Sam, I believe, who are, you know, cutting their teeth. They're young people. They're probably, as you rightly say, not very well paid, probably better paid than my team, I'm afraid to say, but they're what they are, and they'll cut their teeth and they'll move on through the Echo network, because they all now support the evening paper. And again, this area is lucky to have an evening paper. I know it doesn't come over to Brentwood, but certainly in Billericay the Echo is still sustained and does quite well. And in this day and age, evening newspapers are something of an anathema. I work for the Scarborough Evening News. It is no more. It's a weekly paper. I work for the Peterborough Evening Telegraph. It is no more. It's a weekly paper. I don't think it's anything to do with me. I was long gone when they changed it. But that's the way, obviously, the internet and the immediate news have changed it. But newspapers will survive. They will always. I remember when I started, going back to, we were talking about the 70s, and somebody came along to me and said, "You're daft, you, going into newspapers. It's finished. There's this new thing called teletext." He said, and that's how we'll get all our news in this day and age.
Yeah.
Well, I think teletext shut down about three years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, and I know that. I must tell you this. I was been meaning to ring Neil all week to come in the programme today, and I just didn't get around to it. And then last night we were both on a train at West Ham on an underground train, and we bumped into each other. Hence, Neil's here today. But you know, if you travel on a train on the C2C line into London every morning, whereas 20 years ago, you wouldn't see a face because they were all behind a newspaper. Most people are reading a tablet now of some description, getting their news off there, or they are actually reading the free newspaper, the Metro, as they go in.
Yeah, or the Standard coming back.
Or the Standard coming back.
Or, of course, the Enquirer on a Thursday morning.
Exactly.
We're at local railways, so get that plug in there.
Yeah, okay, well done.
But, yes, and it's interesting, do they take them away? A lot of the, you know, I see the guys and girls at Fenchurch Street or at Southend, you know, filling their big plastic bags full of papers at the end of the day. And there's a huge commitment from the newspaper industry to make sure that we pick up all the papers that are dumped outside the stations, for example.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they are well read. And it's interesting, you'll see the difference between people reading a newspaper and people reading a tablet. I think you'll find that the people reading the newspaper take more in and get more enjoyment out of it. Now, I may be biased, but I do think that's the case.
Let's do a straw poll. Joe, where do you get your news from?
Sometimes I do get it on the tablet, but if I do go into London, I do get the Metro in the morning and the Evening Standard coming back.
And you'll enjoy reading them?
Yeah, I do enjoy reading it. You know, it's... there's like a certain feel to a newspaper, you know.
Well, absolutely.
But on the other hand, with like a tablet news, it's much more up to date, if you see what I mean. And it can be a lot more up to date.
Good.
But that's about content, because at the end of the day, the newspaper that you read, it's a snapshot in time, it's printed and it's there forever, so it can't update. Mm. But the variety of things that you'll see without having to flick from screen A to B to C by just turning a page, you look at any one page in my newspaper, it will have half a dozen different stories on it, and hopefully something on there to attract you. Don't forget, newspapers are about information, but they're also about entertainment.
Yeah.
They're about, you know, taking up your time with something useful to do. And learning as well.
Okay, there's been some innovative local news websites that have started up, and they've been very good, and you've sort of come back at that by having your own website now. So because the argument with an internet news website is that they can be absolutely up to date, whereas you're printed for the week and that's it, isn't it? So how much resources are you putting into your internet stuff these days?
Well, we do most things that happen that are in the common area, if you know, like road crashes, traffic incidents, robberies, things like happening, we will cover them because we know that they're going to be put there by other people. We tend to take the content of our paper that's printed on that's out on a Thursday, printed on a Wednesday, and spread that over the net through the week so there are people to read. But we also put a full edition of the paper online in PDF format, the flipping pages, and so people can read it there. So it is an amalgam of everything, and of course it's also the advertisers want to see that. We mustn't forget that my bread and butter is paid for by the people who advertise.
Absolutely.
But we like to think, you know, you've seen websites. I know you've got involvement with websites.
Yeah.
And advertising on websites, does it work? I don't think it does.
Okay, you've got a young man sitting here who's just about to get into your industry. Could you give him any sort of advice, really?
The old standards are going to come trotting out again. Learn shorthand.
Yeah, I'm doing T-Line at the moment.
Good. It'll be a fabulous tool for you. It really is. People say, I've got a recorder. Yeah. The problem is you take a recorder...
Because you can't take it into court, can you?
No, you can't. Exactly. You can now take them into councils and things like that. But at the end of the day, by writing it down, you're getting a gist of what's going on.
Yeah.
But also...
And you're listening.
Well, that's the key that I was going to say. But make sure you are actually listening and taking it in. Because the problem is I've seen reporters fill notebook after notebook after notebook as they've been doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're not actually listening. What they're concentrating on is getting little scrolls down on a piece of paper. They haven't got a clue what anybody's talking about.
Right,
they don't listen to the invective of what's said, and that's important. If you go to a council meeting, you get half a dozen councillors standing up and getting emotional. The way they say things is almost as important as what they say. When you're looking back 2 days later at a shorthand note, if you haven't been listening to what's gone on, you can't translate that emotion.
Absolutely. I'm the only sort of journalism I've ever done, really, is writing theatre reviews. And I always start writing, I suppose, about halfway through in my head when I'm watching a play, and I start writing it then. So rather than just so-and-so played so-and-so and so-and-so played so-and-so, I'll just try and give it a bit of description. Right, let's take a quick break. We're going to have a bit of music, and then I'm going to come back and talk about what's in your newspaper today. Did I mention I'm going to California? Choir Group newspapers. Neil, one thing I didn't really touch on before, we're just talking quickly about the online newspapers we've had. Your Thurrock, your Harlow is the new one. Very, very successful, and there are others around the country. Do you feel seriously threatened by those, or is there room in the market for both of you?
Oh, I think there's room, and fair play. Michael Casey is the guy who set up the Your Thurrock and the guy behind Your Harlow, and I know we both know him very well. And Mike is a man with a passion. He works ruthless. You know, he's ruthless when he gets his teeth into something. He goes for it, and he's good. And I was very lucky that Michael came down and worked for me. He changed careers.
Yeah.
Did his training at Harlow, and you know, must have been very strange being a middle-aged man in the middle of all those. But he stuck it through and came and did his work experience with me on, and he was exactly what I needed at the time. And you know, I would have no hesitation in recommending him to anybody. If you want somebody who's going to go out and ferret out a story for you, he's there. He moved on and he saw the niche.
Yeah.
for it and had the bravery and the guts to go for it, and yes, he certainly did something different, something new, and I think that's where a lot of the websites that are just reflections of big national companies struggle, because nobody really cares about them. It's a chore and an onus thing, whereas Mike there, he drove your Thurrock, it was his baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought something different to Thurrock, and he's done a very good job, and I still look at your Thurrock on a regular basis, and you know, I'll be honest with you, now and again I pinch a story from it, and I usually do ask but hopefully Michael does the same with our papers, and we work together. I think we can be complementary.
Yeah,
there's a synergy between us that he's got, you know, for example, obviously there's an awful lot of videos and things on there, and so I think, you know, on occasion we've run stories and said, to see a full version of this, go on to your Thurrock. So you know, we don't do it all the time, because clearly we are also competing, but we can scratch each other's backs, and fair play to him what he's done. So if you haven't seen those websites, then people should log on, yourthurrock.com or yourharlow.com, go and have a look.
I know Michael always quotes, you know, how many newspapers, particularly not maybe in so much in the UK, but in the USA, there's newspapers fall very easily over there. They start up and they fall very easily. So yeah, but it's interesting, isn't it, which way people will go. Youngsters seem today. Joe, you want to say something? No, go on, sorry.
Yeah, just quickly. Michael Casey actually came and does come into the University Centre, Harlow, where I'm studying, and where he trained, and he offers the chance for us to write for your Harlow and your Thurrock. You know, it's a fantastic opportunity for young people to really get involved in the industry, you know, and it's giving something back, you know. I admire him for that. You know, because where he trained, you know, he's given. Yeah.
Hang on, if he's listening to this, he's not going to get out of his car now. His head looks that big. Hey, come on. No, he's a great lad. He's a great lad, and good luck to him.
Right, now let's get on to what you actually printed in the paper this week. Now, you had a little bit of a rant last week. Was it week before? But we've had this disastrous news about the police force, haven't we?
Let me just
bring up what you actually, because I've got it somewhere here, and I've kind of lost it now, but you've got it in front of you. This is basically about the police force and the cutbacks. We talked about it last week with the... Here, I found it now. A shameful day for police, you wrote. This week's decision by Essex Chief Constable Steve Kavanagh and his partner in crime, Nick Alston, will be difficult to swallow for most Essex residents, because the region, while far from blighted by crime, nevertheless has its share of problems, and yet time and time again, despite being told a contrary view for a long list of public meetings, residents get fobbed off with a simple message by police chief. To paraphrase, stuff you, we know best. And we've had the news that, particularly here in Brentwood, that it's now just a front counter only, police stations shutting everywhere in the county, hardly anybody's on the beat. I know the answer to this already, but why? What incensed you so much?
Well, if I go back a few years, when the idea of the Police and Crime Commissioner was mooted, and the idea was that these police forces, or police forces across the country, were a self-congratulatory club, they were managing themselves, and they needed somebody to come in with a fresh view and a fresh vision. And the candidates put up for the job, and I met Nick Alston, and I met him in Billericay and in on the Green, and we had a pie and a pint. It was, and I sat and talked to him, and I thought, yeah, this man will do a good job. But crikey, he talked the talk, but he hasn't walked the walk. He's just acquiesced to everything that was going on before, and one of the things he said to me was, you know, we're going to be careful about way money. I don't need a press department. I can say what I need to do. He's got two working in his press department. It just doesn't. He sort of got sucked into this ethos that they've got, and I have since attended a number of meetings where Nick and various the chief constable, or usually sends his deputy out, or one of his lieutenants, and they sit at public meetings, and the public of Essex tell the police what they want, and what they want almost universally is to see a bigger police presence. They want to feel safe. They want to know that somewhere near them at any given time there is a police officer. And they keep telling the senior police people this is what they want, and they believe it will cut crime. And universally, the senior police officers will say, well, actually, you've got to realise that if we stick a man in a police car and we put him at a central point, he can do this, this. And they come up with all the highfalutin nonsense that we've been hearing for the last 20 years. Now, they will quote you statistics that says crime is falling. Well, I'm sure it is, because a lot of people don't bother reporting minor crimes anymore. And the reason for that is the police have already told us they won't bother turning up for antisocial behaviour.
But is that the fault of senior police officers in Essex when their hands are possibly tied by budget restrictions from central government?
Well, I
if they've been told to make millions of cuts.
Well, I sympathise with that, but why have they been told? You know, at the end of the day, you look at the I think I refer to them as the boys and their toys. I mean, you know, let's all talk about why do we need a programme called Essex Police Interceptors and see the police swanning around in their Subaru Impressors. You know, do they really need all that gear? Do they need to spend the money in that traffic department, and to the extent that they do? Do they need all the things that they have? Is it not better to have young officers who are committed to the force? And those people do exist. I have met a great number of young officers who are motivated to make a difference. I also know an awful lot of them, by the time they're 26, 27, 28, they're getting out of the force because they can't stand the bureaucracy and the things that are going on. So something's rotten in the police force, and it needs... and that was the idea of the PCCs. They were going to come in and have a look at it. They haven't, that hasn't worked. And I'm sorry, yes, they do have cuts. They probably, you know, would need to reduce manpower, unfortunately. But at the end of the day, I think their obligation is to the people that they serve, and they should look at doing what the people that they serve want. And I think it was all paraphrased by the divisional commander over in Thurrock, who put out a lovely, I mean, a wonderful glossy leaflet, God knows how much that cost to print, that said, you know, the people of Thurrock have my absolute commitment, we will support the victims of crime. Well, pardon my French, but at the end of the day, if they did their job first, there wouldn't be any victims of crime, would there? And this is the whole point that I was trying to make with my strong words, is they're reactive rather than proactive.
Okay, you're in a borough as well where the fire service was called toxic recently by an independent report, and they apparently are addressing on that. What was your viewpoint of that?
Well, again, I've met some of the fire service people. I've occasionally attended youth training events and things like that when they're there, and there are a great many people who, to paraphrase, on the shop floor who seem to think that their senior management is a joke. Now, okay, we've all worked in whatever form of industry, we've all probably got our criticisms of those people or our managers, and sometimes those criticisms will be justified and sometimes they won't be. But to find an independent person coming in and using a word like toxic shows you how bad things have gone adrift.
Absolutely.
And you've only got to look at, you know, it's not hardly a week goes by now where there isn't a strike in Essex Fire Service for one reason or another. So something's not right.
No, and it's been like that for the last 30 years, basically.
Yeah. And we've a chief fire officer who lives in Suffolk and got paid a fortune to move house and all the other nonsense that went with that.
And suspended for...
That's the other thing. How on earth, and this is the same, this has happened in the police force, how on earth can you have a senior officer earning over £100,000 a year or more be suspended for duty for over a year?
I don't know. How the hell
does that happen? It's a nonsense.
I don't know. I take it you're not a fan of PCCs then, either.
Well, no, I like the principle of PCCs, because at the end of the day, somebody coming in, taking an analytical look at something, and being independent and assuming you were supposed to be fiercely independent, I think is a good thing. Everybody needs a watchdog. I'm sure I might think I'm the best editor in the world, but I'm sure somebody could come in from outside and look at the way I operate and say, well, actually, you could do that better. Mm. And at the end of the day, that's what he was supposed to do. And he will sit... And I've spoken... I mean, I'll give him his due. He picked the phone up a couple of weeks ago when I wrote something about him, and we had a chat about it. So I'll give him his due. He did that.
Right, to his credit.
But at the end of the day, I go back to him and I having that pie and a pint in the Inn on the Green. And I honestly think if he was really truthful to himself, he would say that he's not done what he intended to do. And the fact that he's not standing for re-election, I think, speaks volumes.
Okay, you're in a... You live and work in an area which is wonderful politically. You've seen it all the goings on at Thurrock Council. You've seen all the goings on at Brentwood Council recently with Tories defecting and going backwards and forwards. That's healthy, isn't it? It's good for you.
It's good for us. It's entertaining. And as long as people do what they do for the right reasons and they're committed, then fine. If people want to jump ship and people want to switch and have a different label, then fine if that's what genuinely motivates them. Some of it's showboating, some of it's self-effacing people, you know. It is difficult. I mean, councillors, to their credit, stick their head above the parapet. And they have a go. And some of them, you can say some of them do it for the money. Well, at the end of the day, I think the average councillor probably picks up about eight and a bit grand a year, which isn't a huge amount of money for the amount of time that they do, if they do the job properly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then we get other councillors, and there was a classic, there was a guy in Thurrock, I think, attended three meetings in 4 years.
Aaron, somebody.
So you do get the bad apples, of course you do. But generally, you've got to admire people who stick their heads above the parapet and are prepared to do something, because at least they're having a go, and there's nothing worse than apathy.
Absolutely. Russell Quirk sat in that very chair with you, and I think this was a couple of years ago, and he said something, and it made the headlines in the paper, because he called somebody something else, etc. But he said, what do you want me to be? Do you want me to be somebody says nothing and you've never heard of me? Or do you want me to be somebody who's making a noise all the time? I said, make a noise.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, I've spoken to Russell on several occasions, and you certainly can't ignore the man. And
no, of course
whether
you
agree with him or disagree with him, that's not really the point. The fact is, he's bringing issues into the public debate, and that is important. And again, I you see, you talk about, we go back to newspapers. Newspapers went through a fad in the 80s, and I think this contributed to their demise, where they suddenly, it was all about features and the people, and they stopped covering court and they stopped covering council, and they started writing arty-farty features that nobody was interested in because they didn't affect people's lives. I've always been a great believer in covering council, and I did it myself, and court, and that's where you get the nitty-gritty of things that really go on. So I think councils are things that affect people's lives, and councillors and whatever, we have to admire what they do, and we have to listen to the debates, because too many people, I think, will say, what does the council ever do for me? And that was the subject of one of my leaders this week. Is what, you know, is what do Romans ever do for us? Well, when you actually analyse it, a heck of a lot. And in fairness to councils, they do a heck of a lot. Most of it unsung.
Absolutely. Is it just coming back on a national issue now, though, is it fair that a newspaper can be so powerful that it can deter a government of the country? And it's happened twice recently. Neil Kinnock, ruined by the Sun newspaper, and Ed Miliband, to a certain extent, by, you've got to admit that Ed Miliband partly lost the election this time because of one picture of a bacon sandwich. Is it right that the Sun has got that much power?
Well, at the end of the day, the power lies in the hands of the people who vote. Now, they're influenced and whatever. Yeah, I mean, the great headline was, it the last person who leaves
the country switched the lights off. Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's a comment and it's opinion. And I think people are, they are influenced by that. Of course they are. But I think people, what it tends to do with the national newspapers, they're a polar opposite. So the Daily Mail will be the polar opposite of the Sun, and you know, and the Times, and the Guardian will be so they polarise themselves and pick a point, and I think people align themselves with the newspaper of their viewpoint. And so, do you blame the newspaper for reflecting the views of what its potential readership is? I don't know. I don't think you can, really. So I think you can over elaborate on the importance of newspapers. At that level, at the end of the day, comment is comment. I mean, you know, I wrote a very strong comment in my newspaper 2 weeks ago about the police that you've just kindly read out. But there will be a lot of people who think I'm talking absolute rubbish, and the new prospective Conservative PCC thinks I'm talking absolute rubbish and told me so. So, you know, fair enough. Yeah, people, as long as you stick a label on it that says this is comment, don't masquerade it as news. Yeah. Comment is always fair.
Okay.
And then as long as your news is fair, that's the next thing.
Absolutely. Back in a moment.
Here at the Brentwood Brewing Company, we've been brewing and selling great local beers since 2006. From our home at Colcott Hall Farm, we offer a wide range of products and services, including our beer club, guided brewery tours, tastings, open days, and the ultimate brewing experience, great for both private and corporate days out. To see our full range of products and services, visit our website, www.brentwoodbrewing.co.uk, or call us on 01277 200 483.
In these days of social and electronic news everywhere, it's still good to spend time reading a newspaper. And a newspaper that's local, dealing with issues and stories that you want to read about. The Enquirer Group newspapers are packed with news, views, competitions and real in-depth reporting on the stories that are making today's headlines. With excellent sports coverage as well, make sure you pick up your copy of the Essex or the East London or the Thurrock Enquirer today. The Enquirer Group, a newspaper as it should be.
123 is brought to you in association with Affinity Wills. Future planning for your benefit. visit our website at affinitywills.co.uk.
Phoenix 98 FM travel update.
Yeah, all quiet on the roads at the moment. Can't see any problems on the M25, the A13 or the A12. All moving nicely. Brentwood High Street, a little bit slow at the moment, but as you, of course, you're well aware, the big hole, Dunninghurst Road and junction with Ongar Road, still there. I just peeked down it. It's nearly full up, so I don't think we're too far away from a road reopening there. Looking wide around the country, no real problems to speak of. The Dartford Cross seems to be okay at the moment. A13 roadworks all working well. Friday afternoon, though, we'll keep you updated and in the next travel report in the next half hour.
Helping to keep Brentwood and Billericay moving. Phoenix 98 FM travel.
Neil, one of the other big hats you wear, you've got a certain love of football. You're very heavily involved in East Thurrock United. How's your season going?
No, it's the last game. Always go by your last game. And our last game was we went and played the top of the table, Leiston, and beat them 3-0. But sadly, last Saturday, we crashed out of the FA Cup in dreadful fashion. But let's talk about the positives of football. And, of course, Brentwood Town. I mean, how great a season is this?
Yeah, really going well.
Fourth qualifying round, first time in their history. Going to Didcot. Got a great chance. Got a really great chance of going to the first round proper. We've done it twice in the last 5 years and had fabulous days at Hartlepool and at home to Macclesfield. So I just, you know, it would be really nice for the people of Brentwood to get behind the Blues.
Yeah.
I go quite often. If we don't have a game, John Coventry, our manager, we trawl around an awful lot of games. We get down to Brentwood quite often. And it's really sad that there aren't more people. And it's not a bad standard of football. And what else are you going to do? You're going to sit in and watch the blooming telly and, you know, get out and support your local team. Something special could happen here this year, and a fair play to Dean Holdsworth and the committee and the people there who've backed him and brought in a manager of his calibre and have done really great things to step up, win promotion, remarkably last season in the playoffs. I don't think anybody gave them a prayer, and they did it. And I'd like to think that they would, you know, that they'll push on. And of course, the other local team around for the radio station, Billericay, in our division, and we play there on Saturday week, I think it is.
Yeah.
So that'll be a good game. I mean, lots of people get down at New Lodge anyway, so maybe a few more can pop along. And if you can put an amber and black scarf on, I'll be grateful. You've got to love local football. It is special. It's not always fabulous. I've seen some blooming awful 0-0 draws
in wet mud,
but at the end of the day, it costs you a tenner, or it might cost you £8 if you're in Ryman 1 North. You can have a chat, you can have a beer, you can have a burger, you know, and still go home with a heck of a lot more in your pocket than if you trot down to the blooming Emirates.
Exactly, that's what I was going to say, because I mean, father and son, whether they go to White Hart Lane or to the Emirates or to West Ham, you know, sometimes you're losing £100 easily.
I take my lad Jack, he's 12, he comes with me everywhere I go, I pay for him to go in, it's £3 or £2 or whatever, he's 12 years old. And, you know, he enjoys it. And after time, I'll be honest with you, he doesn't watch the game. He finds half a dozen lads and they go and kick a ball around behind a goal. I know, what do you mean kick a ball around? You're at a football game. But you can usually do it. It's the ambience and the atmosphere. It's very enjoyable. And if football isn't your bag, go on with your local rugby club. Again, you know, you look at Brentwood, Billericay, you've got very strong rugby clubs at several different levels. You know, get out and support your local team and have a, you know, you might not be able to play anymore, but have a beer and a laugh and a chat.
When I was 10 years old, my father used to take me to Romford when they used to play at the Brooklands.
What a stadium that was.
It was. Do you know, I was there the other day and suddenly realised I was virtually on the centre pitch. It was a block of flats.
One of the good thing is, because Romford, hopefully they're going to get their new ground shortly. Yeah. A lot of work's gone into it. But they play usually on a Wednesday night down at Ship Lane, where Thurrock's ground is.
Yeah.
And I followed them round about. They were at Averley a couple of seasons ago. Mm. And there's some good people at Romford. Barry is a good friend of mine who does stuff. And Colin, who's the secretary. And we get down and watch. And again, the fabulous core of support that's stuck with them. And the old boys get down there and have a laugh.
They were playing at Averley, I think, a couple of years ago, and I was started talking to some of the diehard Romford supporters, old guys, and they remembered that. I can still remember the Harry Obenys and the Tom Sanders, who used to play for Roy Sanders. I've got it wrong. Tom Barnett, who used to play in '67. They beat an All Star England 11 3-1, and they drew with Arsenal 5-5. I'll never forget. And they won the Southern League and never got promoted because in those days it was done by voting.
The old boys. Club,
old boys club. They never made it, but they're still in the same colours. And there's still a part of me who wants to support Romford Football Club.
Yeah,
you know?
and why not? And as I say, you can. It's not always going to be great. Let's not paint it more than it is. There will be some awful games, but you can still see an awful game at YR Lane.
I have done. Believe me,
it sticks in your craw, and your £20 rail journey home, having paid you 80 quid for a ticket. Arsenal? Is it 97 quid or something now for a ticket?
See, I'm Dagenham and Redbridge, you know, where I'm heavily affiliated to. Bottom of the league at the moment, or bar one. We win, we lose. We win away and lose at home. Our home crowds are diabolical this year, and it's hard to get them back. You know, even when we got promoted to League One, the extra crowds didn't really come. We got an extra 200-300, but still 1,500 average.
But you set your mark, don't you? We get our average gate down at East Thurrock is round about 130, 140 paying customers.
Yeah.
So we budget for that.
Yeah.
And you know where you are. And we've got ambitions to go one rung higher. But realistically, we're not going to go any further than that. But we will enjoy it. And we do. I mean, Saturday we're off to Bognor. One of the few games we'll get a bus. As it happens, I'm coming back to a dinner on Saturday night for the Carys May Darling Foundation, which is a wonderful organisation.
Yeah, I'm very aware of that.
I'm shooting back to get to their dinner. John and Kerry have very kindly invited me to that, which I wouldn't miss for the world. But we'll go down the box. We're going early. We're getting a little sharabang up, two or three of us. We'll go down. We'll have a bit of lunch somewhere and a palm not driving, so I can have a pint. And we'll sit on the seafront at Bognor. We'll have a laugh, a joke. We'll go and watch the game, win, lose or draw, and that'll be happening all over. And it's just a good experience, I find.
Good. Neil, I'll tell you what, promise me you'll come in more often, because I really enjoy this chat. We've actually been chatting for an hour now. We have to go now, but thank you very much. I wish you luck with the Enquirer, and I wish you luck with East Thurrock United as well. Joe, thank you very much as well. I hope you may have learned something from the master himself.
Good luck, young man, and stick with it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, one and all.